It's time for Stars on Sports,
a podcast radio show dedicated to sharing stories about our athletic program at LCC, past and present.
Lansing Community College Athletics has a strong tradition.
25 national championships.
Over 190 All-Americans.
19 MCCAA All-Sports trophies.
Stars on Sports will introduce you to individuals that have contributed to our program's success and give you the backstory on what it takes to develop it.
We'll also dive into and break down the topics and issues facing athletic departments across the nation and right here at LCC.
This is Stars on Sports. Hello and welcome to another episode of Stars on Sports. We're joined today by our assistant athletic director, Stephen Cutter, and our producer, Dedalion Lowry. Gentlemen, going to talk about one thing that most people probably don't pay attention to, but once you notice it, especially as an administrator, you pay a lot of attention to it, but to the normal crowd is, and that's the bench during a game. And as I've talked before on this podcast, I watch coaches. That's my job. I want to watch how they talk, their behavior, if they're demonstrative. But I also like watching the players. And we can spend a lot of time talking about, you know, what good teams do on the bench and how engaged teams do. We had a home volleyball game last night. And the thing that just stuck with me after the match was the characteristics of each bench. And when you observe the bench, it was in direct correlation to what was going on the floor. The team that was winning was much more engaged, and the team that wasn't was not. And just it struck me last night. Coach Cutter and I talked about it last night. I ran into another coach in the office this morning, and it's one thing he noticed. Again, something that was just telling and something I noticed a lot, but it just hit me harder watching last night and how different it was. And
now, when you're talking about it, though, you're kind of talking about it. I mean, I'm formulating my own vision of what it was, but explain so that I get an idea, because I wasn't there.
Right.
What exactly you're saying they were pounding on the.
Yep. Okay. So very good question.
What was the beginning? Let's start with the positive team, the upbeat team, the ones that were energetic. What was going on there?
They were smiling. They were laughing. They were jumping. They were definitely more engaged with the game. And let me, you know, again, I think this is true for me. Both teams were engaged at the beginning.
Okay.
You know, and through probably half the game. But then once I don't believe it's just the score, but because I do believe there's other factors that we can talk about. But, you know, just more engaged, chanting, pounding on the floor, as you mentioned, at certain parts of the match, which some people thought was unsportsmanlike. I didn't mind. I mean, I think, you know, it's a fine line in all our sports, like cheering during a free throw or...
Yeah, well, when you're talking about pounding on the ground, like they were doing it as kind of like a cheer kind of a thing?
It was in unison, so I do respect that more than it was just one person, you know, being obnoxious.
Distracting.
But when we served, they would pound on the floor, or they would chant FBK, which we didn't know what it meant last night, but I talked to a volleyball, and that means first ball kill. The is a motto to the team to try and hit the ball back right away. But just the engagement, the mannerisms, and you see it in every sport on every bench of, and I haven't done enough research to know, but I'm guessing the score has a lot to do with it, because as I told you before we got on the podcast, if you watch the benches, you didn't need to watch the game, because you could tell by the benches how the game was going. You know, there are other characteristics too, and some of it, you know, a lot of things we talk about on this podcast is experience. You know, the team that was losing is youthful. And I looked at the team on the other roster, and they were pretty balanced on sophomores and freshmen. But, you know, it just really stood out. And
so the other team also had more leadership going on.
I agree. I think that is part of it, yes, that they've been through the system before. They've experienced probably adversity before, but they also know what's expected and what their coach's expectation of them during the game and to be engaged. And as I mentioned, it's easy to do at the beginning because both teams are doing it, but then as it goes on.
So if the score wasn't a factor, what would be the other factors that would affect the not quite doing as well team?
Well, I think youth, I think personalities. I think coach, I mean, we're talking about, is the score the only determining factor of why the bench acts the way they do?
Who are the folks on the bench, how they are, and what's going on?
Not usually. I feel like the score a lot of times is 0-0 or it hasn't started yet. But you can definitely see the body language is different, and some of that plays into confidence. Some of it plays into inexperience or maybe what you'd label as youth. There's a variety of different factors, but it certainly affects the outcome.
And do you feel like the folks that were watching the games, did you feel like the audience felt like it was offensive or?
No, I mean, and I don't think the official did either. And that's not the thing that stands out to me, because I will not tolerate unsportsmanlike behavior and don't want it. I don't think it was. I think it was just more of the correlation between the body language on the bench. And, you know, there's some coaches out there that frown upon body language, you know, that, you know, especially negative body language. This wasn't that. And again, I'm not, you know, here to critique either team last night. It was just more a telling tale of, it was a pretty even match for the first half of the contest. And then I think it did pull away. And I still believe youth is a part of that. Talent is a part of it. Leadership is a part of it, especially student leadership on the benches, because if you have a more experienced bench, I think, you know, they can help navigate that game management situation, where if you have a lot of youth, it could be confidence, it could be comfortability, it could be
belief.
And again, I think that's another one that I wonder how much that played into it, because when you see it through many teams, I think belief starts to disappear as you know what the outcome could be. That I think that's a big part of it, actually. But I thought it fed off of it. You know, the one team that was more confident, their belief got stronger, and the one team that didn't, their belief got less. And then the score dictated that, you know. So, yes. So, and I know in your team, you really work on bench engagement throughout a game, especially with a large team and in a sport where the participation playing time we've talked about too.
Yeah, and communication when it comes down to body language is more than just verbal. It's, you can see it in people. And yeah, we do work on that kind of stuff, but it's also, it's somewhat of a double-edged sword, because if you hear a bench that's loud and cheering, sometimes that makes other people not as happy, because maybe their bench isn't doing the same, or it's a little bit uncommon. But if you actually listen, and last night I was definitely listening to both benches, and if you listen, and if you've got people that are cheering for each other, not jeering the other team or putting the other team down, but actually cheering for each other through positive stuff, through negative stuff, it's a sporting event or it's life, things are going to happen. That's positive. That's what you want, and because that's showing that people are invested in what's happening, not just it's fake, you know, we're just going to cheer the whole game. It's like, you know, I'm going to react to something that happens, but I'm going to do it in a positive way to say that it's going to be all right, or next pitch or next play or, you know, next step in life, whatever it might be. And you typically see with great teams, people that have a lot of success, you're going to see that over and over and over and over. And it's not going to matter what's happening outside or how hard it's raining or anything else. It's going to be pretty consistent.
And I think you're right. I think great teams, you do see it. And, you know, even in the sport of baseball, I feel there's been some lack of clarity on what sportsmanship is, because baseball, in my background, like softball, you hear a lot of cheering between, they sing songs, and some of them are great, and it's constant. And baseball doesn't sing songs, but they've gotten louder in the bench area, especially at the college level, even at the high school level now. But, and that can rub people the wrong way. That's a very interesting perspective, because I don't know if that it was a negative thing last night. I don't think one team's cheering hurt the other team. I think there were other factors, but I went home and watched the tennis match, two of the best tennis players in the world, and the crowd rallied behind one, and it got under the skin of the other one, and he lost that set. He ended up winning the match, but you could see for 30 minutes he was just out of his mind, and he had to recalibrate, and he did. But You're right. I think some of it is fake out there. I think some teams do it and it's too scripted and it's not. Because the other point is the support there. I agree that's contagious. And that's what we saw last night. It was contagious because they were having fun. They were high-fiving, which I'm a big believer in. We've talked about before how that's shown to be a positive thing of
just
team success.
Touching in general.
So it can be scripted, but I think the game fed itself, I also, again, still believe youth played a part of it, but it definitely impacted the match. And so when you support someone like that, I do believe it carried the one team over the other team. And that wasn't the deciding factor. I mean, there's lots of things with youth and being tired or consistency. But it was very interesting to me. It seemed like people that watch benches noticed it last night.
I think my curiosity came from how did people view it, just because I know, like, on my bowling team, my team tends to be one of the louder teams. And it's not for any other reason other than we're just there having fun. We do our best always to try to be supportive of, because again, this is not like professional league. Mm-hmm. We're doing this for fun. So we also try to be very supportive of the other players and the other team. But occasionally there have been times where I feel like we've been viewed like we're heckling them. And it's like, no, we generally love seeing you get a strike. Nice job. And then the other thing that came to mind, and I think this comes down to more of a, the touchdown dance kind of concept, but me and my buddy had a thing where we'd do a strike dance, and it was just a way for us to bond. And what we did is every week that the league would pass, we would add another move to that strike dance. So you're talking about 20 weeks. By the time we got done, I'm not lying, there was times I would get done with this dance and I'd be out of breath, but it was something that we stopped doing because we felt like other teams were looking at us like we were like running it in. It's like, it wasn't our goal.
Good,
it was a bonding thing for us.
And that's a fine line. And again, I tried to allude to it with baseball because I think that's a sport still trying to figure out what bench demeanor is. It's that fine line of having fun, being unsportsmanlike.
Right.
And it's tough. And it's tougher because everyone had a different definition. Like to me last night, they weren't. But talking to a person this morning, they thought they were a little unsportsmanlike with during the serve and such. So I think that's true. Even referring back to the tennis match, the one guy did a little dance after the game and people might have been offended, but then the interview and he explained it was his daughter's birthday and she taught him that dance. So it is a fine line. And with highlights now on TV all the time and kids trying to come, like you, going a next step each strike, which is good to hear you're getting a lot of strikes, Adalian.
Actually, it's not me. It's the other guy that gets all the strikes. So basically, I'm dancing for him, but whatever.
Support. But
that's what the point was. It's just a bonding thing.
And I didn't think of this, and I know you probably talked to it on your podcast, is the word you use, is it Medina?
Mudita.
Yeah, and I heard that last night even, and it's the joy of playing. And I think we lose that sometimes, that there should be joy in playing. You should have fun. And loud equals fun. That's not always true, but again, if you observe, you can determine if it's fun or unsportsmanlike.
Well, and on the flip side, I will tell you that I have one of my players actually was asked to quiet down, not because he was having a good time, but because he was having the opposite of a good time. And it was just a thing where he would kind of yell in the middle of somebody throwing, you know, their ball. And that by any means I understood. I was like, yeah, that's distracting. I can throw you off.
Yeah, and I think that's key in sport success is I don't want to get under the skin of the opponent, but when you know you get under the skin of the opponent, you're at an advantage. And that is, you can see it by their body language, their frustration. And I wouldn't want to use bench decorum to heckle another bench, but once you see the other bench is frustrated, I think you know you're at an advantage. And the thing with that tennis match, I think the guy won the set because he took advantage of him being frustrated. I don't want the team to do it to get under the skin, but as a coach or a bench, when you see you've gotten under the skin, that takes them away from their strategy and their focus of being successful. That's more, I hope, because of the score and you're beating them, not because of heckling or being negative toward the other team. And I never want the teams going back and forth. You know, you see student sections go back and forth, but I frown upon and don't like if the teams are bantering back and forth or even their individual language. That does not lead to a positive outcome. But when you have the positivity or the louder, the other, it does, we're competitive. So I think it leads to the other team feeling they need to do something, unless there's other circumstances going on, such as the game is over or you've lost your belief system, which I, you know, you alluded to. Again, last night was more just telling that it was just so synchronous with the game, but there's so many other factors too there, yeah. I believe.
I think that's the hardest part, is defining why. Why does it look like that? Because if you could really truly define it, you could turn it into a pill or something that you just read or learn, then you'd see body language, you'd see benches, you would see people more engaged when they're, whether it's in the work environment or the sport environment.
And that's hard because the coach isn't watching the bench. I mean, hopefully your assistant or someone else, but they're watching the game.
Certainly.
But as a coach, I would hope you would find a way to gauge that. And that's where, again, experience comes in.
Sometimes it's education, too. I know, like, we've had a dugout cam at different points in our journey through the coaching. And you'd see some incredible stuff when somebody had hit a home run or something. You see, you know, 95% of the team super excited and ready to get out of the dugout and congratulate them. But, you know, you might see one or two that's not. And so then, instead of just labeling that as, oh, they're not happy for somebody else's success, you take that and you leverage that as not only a communication, but also a teaching point. And you show them that video, and, you know, you ask questions like, you know, if you hit one, how would you feel if your teammate was doing this? And most of the time that works pretty well, because sometimes we just kind of get in our own worlds and we forget what things, how we're coming off or how things are looking. And so a big piece of it, especially I believe with just student athletes and younger college, you know, high school kids, is just showing them what it looks like. And, you know, from there they can start stacking some bricks, and usually you see them do a lot better.
Mm-hmm. And I do believe, again, that's a point of the coaches, even though they're not watching it during the game, but I think it does, hopefully they find ways to understand what did happen, because there are clues there to what the team believe, positivity thing. And even more so, that's a good point too, because, I mean, you've talked before about we're all selfish. We're all, you know, I listened to a podcast today that, you know, we all think the spotlight's on us, when really it's not. But even last night, you could even tell on the bench that was winning, it was pretty synchronous, pretty congruent. But on the other bench, you could even tell different levels of maybe kids not happy with their own situation in that game. That, to your point of not celebrating when someone does well. And again, I thought the team out on the floor did a nice job of trying to build up after play and support the younger team. Again, I think it's something that gets lost that you mentioned, that I think the good team do spend time on that and find ways. And it is in practice of whether keeping a journal, which is I'm a big believer of, and I know this team does keep a journal, and addressing it, because I think it does feed into hold the whole team and their success of the season, that maybe it does happen more with coaches that I know that deal with it, but I think it should happen more too, because I think it does help with the overall success of a program, especially when you are struggling, because to your point, that could help build confidence, support of the people that are out there that are struggling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you've all felt that again, if the crowd gets behind you, how that creates momentum and confidence that you go on a little run that, you know, your bench can. And I'm a believer that your bench is your biggest model of sportsmanship. I have always talked about in coaching meeting how if a coach is demonstrative, that feeds to the bench and that feeds to the crowd. And if it's a negative thing, then they're all yelling, and that's not what we want. And some coaches are better at others at having that body language. But I think it's good to show some emotion in big plays. But again, that's separate than how your team acts naturally from the flow of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your bench pretty much tells what your culture or your environment of your team is. It's the true reflection most of the time.
Yeah, again, because that is, again, what's happening naturally from the events, the ERO. And again, you can strategize and you can make adjustments, but the actions of your bench are showing. And then last night, I think, again, that's what showed so much between the two teams, positive or negative. And again, and you know, it's early in the season with a young team that I'm guessing both teams will continue to work on that. But for one, it can help them maybe build the confidence to be more successful. Okay, to the favorite time of the podcast. And I'm running out of food questions, guys. But and we've talked about favorite ice cream before.
I know you brought up ice cream one time.
I know. What about fruit? Which one you guys want to answer? Your favorite fruit or your favorite ice cream flavor?
We're at the end of summer right now as we're recording this. Let's roll with the ice cream.
Okay.
Last chance for a dip.
Uh-huh. It is. So do you have a favorite place or a favorite flavor or something like a unique concoction you like to make? You want me to go first?
Sure. Let's let you
I
do
think
it.
I've talked before. Coffee ice cream is my favorite, which is crazy. I don't even like coffee, but I love coffee ice cream. I'm a big Dairy Queen guy. I think Dairy Queen had the best ice cream bar none, the franchise Dairy Queen. I love ice cream. Our family loves ice cream. I was talking to my son last night. He was going to the store to get something. I go, get ice cream. He goes, I can't. Our freezer's already full of ice cream. And that made his dad proud that his freezer is full of ice cream. Your freezer probably full of pizza cutter, but in our family, it's ice cream. But, you know, a Heath Blizzard is a favorite of mine if I'm going to add two things together. But at our local place in town, they have different flavors throughout the summer, and they have a cinnamon that's pretty good and a black cherry that I don't like. They also have peach and lemon, which I think are nasty but are popular. But I could go with a good coffee ice cream any time of the day, any day of the week, any time of the year.
I could roll a lemon ice cream. That'd be
all
right.
Oh, that sounds so nasty.
Yeah, I could rock that. That'd be all right.
Cutter, you agree with me on this one? Or you agree with you usually agree with him on your food palate.
I mean, I don't know about the peach one. That doesn't sound good.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, ice cream's ice cream. I will definitely lean towards like the flurries and stuff. If we can get some Reese's peanut butter cups in it or like M&M's, that. You know, something like that, I'll lean towards that. But I don't get a whole lot of ice cream. My family loves ice cream, so I feel like I'm at one of the two ice cream shops in Mason, you know, quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But that being said, don't necessarily have a favorite. It's not like I dislike it. It's just, you know, I keep it pretty simple for the most part.
Yeah. So what's a favorite flavor, though? What would you want?
I would go with some kind of probably vanilla with, Reese's or M&M's.
That's a good combination. I like Reese's peanut butter cups. And I'm a chocolate person over vanilla, but I don't mind a twist or just plain ice cream. Interesting, a baseball coach, man. When I play baseball, we went to the ice cream store after every game. You know, even that's how I grew up, like an ice cream. My grandparents took us miniature golfing and then the Dairy Queen after. And now my parents have done that with my children. So it's so weird, but miniature golfing and ice cream. So
I would concur with your coffee one. I do like that one. Okay. But my favorite's always going to be cream de menthe. It's always my favorite. That's my go-to. Whenever I'm in doubt and I don't know what I want, that's what I do. And then as far as concoctions go, I get inventive. It's fun. But banana split's always going to be the one.
Yeah, that's a good
one. I mean, it's just beautiful. And I do not have a favorite ice cream place, oddly enough. I mean, I just don't eat enough ice cream these days to actually do that. But I remember back in the day, House of Flavors on the corner of Cedar and Jolly was my favorite place a long time ago. Neat. And that is so long ago. Which really just ages me, but
that's
you know.
Good stuff. Again, just like having a favorite pizza place, I believe everyone should have a favorite local ice cream place.
So. And QD's all right.
QD is good ice cream too. So, all right. Until next time, go Stars. Stars on Sports is recorded live at the WLNZ Studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalion Lowry, and you can listen to the episode and other episodes of Stars on Sports on demand at lccconnect.org. To find more information about our athletic program, visit lccstars.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to join us next time for more Stars on Sports.
Go Stars! Oh, examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College has been a proud collaborator of the Mason Promise Scholarship since 2016. The Mason Promise Scholarship is a community organization of volunteers that guarantees funding for 2 years of Lansing Community College education to selected Mason Public School students. These selected students are chosen by the Mason Public Schools at the end of the fifth grade and then become a Mason Promise Scholarship through an induction ceremony. Over the course of the next 6 years, these students receive mentoring and support, as well as introduction to career possibilities through the Pathway Program. For more information on the Mason Promise Scholarship at LCC, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
Hey there, this is Dedalian, and I want to invite you to join me for a show called Behind the Connection. It dives into what's happening behind the scenes here at LCC Connect. It also provides you early introductions to new podcasts, some of the Connect initiatives that we are putting forth, and, of course, insights into the concept of building the voices, vibes, and vision of LCC Connect. Find out more about it at our website. It's lccconnect.org.
It doesn't matter if you're 22 or 62, whether you're trying to figure out how to pay off a student loan or how you're going to pay for retirement. Maybe you're a parent trying to provide for your family, struggling to pay the bills on time. The tough economy is affecting all of us, and it can be overwhelming. There's no need to fight the battle alone. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling wants you to know there is help available for whatever kind of debt problem you're facing. The NFCC is a nonprofit organization with more than 50 years of experience. Certified counselors in your area can help you take the first step in getting a grip on your finances. And they can help create a personalized plan and show you how to make educated decisions about your financial future. You are not alone. Let the NFCC help get you started. Call them at 800-388-2227 or visit debtadvice.org. That's 800-388-2227 or visit debtadvice.org. This has been a public service from the NFCC.
Founded in 1957, LCC has addressed the needs of Michigan industries through education for more than 65 years. Anchored by the downtown campus located in the heart of Lansing, LCC serves mid-Michigan communities with additional campuses in Delta Township and East Lansing. The college offers more than 200 degree and certificate programs and is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Those interested in learning more about LCC may visit lcc.edu/youbelong.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Now Spinning, the official podcast of the Lansing Community College Vinyl Record Club. We meet twice a month to listen to vinyl and talk about music. Stay tuned to learn about how you can get in touch with us and attend our meetings. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Today we have with me...
Noah Miller.
And Tyler Reck.
And I'm still Simon Medina, as far as we know. So today we're going to be talking about our last meeting of the spring semester. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend this one in person, but I see that we have quite a good playlist left behind for me to look at. So let's jump right into it.
We got live recordings.
Live recordings today. Yeah. And of course, we have to start with one of the most famous live albums ever. If your grandma doesn't have this one, I'd be kind of shocked. And we have Frampton Comes Alive and the song Show Me the Way by Peter Frampton.
Indeed, that talkbox solo. Yes.
Especially when you see it live. Oh, like, yeah. Serious, I saw him live once. It was awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Open for Steve Miller Band. I wish I had a live album of theirs, if they even have a live album of theirs.
This album weirds me out sometimes because it's his biggest album, but like it's a live album. It's interesting to me. Like the hype was built up before this, but the album itself was the culmination of that somehow.
Right.
It's like an interesting trajectory for me because usually like the live album comes out after the artist gets big, but it's the other way around for this guy.
Yeah. And then we have Bye Bye Love by Simon and Garfunkel.
And this was off of Bridge Over Troubled Water, which is a lovely album.
The penultimate song, second to last.
On that, yeah.
Pretty sure penultimate means that.
I think that's what it means. Yeah.
And the crowd is just absolutely losing their mind for this. When I was listening to it by myself, it's just like the crowd is almost overpowering Simon and Garfunkel themselves.
Yeah, that was an interesting mixing choice.
I think that's what I like about the song, because I like it more than like their live in Central Park thing.
Mm. Okay.
Never listened to that one.
That's why I chose to play Bye Bye Love instead of something off of the Central Park album.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to say this one, it's also an interesting song as a cover because this is their last album. So I feel like it's kind of being meta about it, like Bye Bye, we're not doing this anymore. There's a couple of songs on this album that like it's kind of hinting at the fact that they hate each other and they don't want to make music together.
The only living boy in New York.
And then there's a song that's So Long, Frank Lloyd Wright, and like the end of the song he says So Long, Art on it, but it's buried in the mix.
No, that was a producer that said So Long, Artie.
Oh, and he didn't. I remember reading that Art Garfunkel didn't know about that until someone told him in an interview, and he's like, "What?"
Because he had to keep repeating "so long, so long," and he kept repeating. You know, because you have to figure out when to fade it and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good album though. This is an interesting song off of that.
Yeah,
interesting choice to just put a random live song on there, but it worked out. I think fits the vibe.
And then we get to the part where Paul McCartney explodes.
If you've seen that video, you know what we mean.
Yeah.
And Live and Let Die.
He's been doing that since, I think, like the pyrotechnics thing. He's been doing that since this tour, which was in like 1977. So he likes the pyrotechnics. It's a good song for it. It's a very, I would say it's like very theatrical, but like it's literally a movie theme. So like I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
Yeah, and I mean, also one thing about this recording, too, is that it's just very tight.
This is a very good live album.
This is something you'd play in band class, most certainly.
We did play this in band class.
I know we did.
Yeah. This is my favorite, one of my favorite live albums of all time. Not my very favorite, but it's top five for me. It's a massive album. It's three discs, not just two. Most live albums are two, but this one's, they crammed a third one in there. And I think it's worth it. It's a very... very good time for Paul McCartney and his band. It's very, I think, their peak live era, at least.
Nice.
For me, anyway. Good album.
And then we got Coheed and Cambria's Three Evils, Embodied in Love and Shadow. This album, Live at the Sarlen Ballroom, this was in 2005. So this was before their big Good Apollo, I'm Burning Star 4 album, which includes Welcome Home. That's probably their biggest hit. That is their biggest hit. But these first two albums, their first two albums, this live album has a lot of kind of a mix of both of those on there. And this one kind of takes place during kind of an intense interrogation scene with one of the characters named Sizer is what's called an iRobot, spelled slightly different than, you know, the famous Will Smith movie or, you know, the Isaac Asimov story.
Yeah.
But it's basically like a humanoid creature that is also, you know, mechanical, but not outwardly mechanical, but can still do enhanced things.
Sure.
And it's basically, yeah, just an intense interrogation scene, but the song itself is very poppy and very like kind of, you know, pop punk rock in there. It comes off their second album where they start incorporating more of that pop kind of psychedelia sort of sound into their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing with this is just kind of juxtaposition. It's a poppy song, very dark lyrical themes. One of the last lyrics is pull the trigger and the nightmare stops.
Damn.
So,
wow.
But it's sung in this really happy, like, do, 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 do.
So it's kind of like a pumped up kicks thing, then, you know, kind of sad lyrics, but happy, upbeat sounding backing track.
Basically, kind of that, but yeah, just very intense. Just read the comics that go along with it if you want more of a visual for it. But yeah, it's just a really good album, really good recording, too. They're playing a lot of stuff faster, they're still kind of in their punkier roots going into their third album, but their songwriting is more poppy, psych-centric.
Very nice. I wanted to make a quick shout-out to the next song. I can't say the name of it, but the band Bad Brains, I just listened to this album, actually, for the first time, last week, and it is a very interesting band. It's like a hardcore punk, but like a reggae band at the same time, and it's not like not really a fusion thing, because like on their first album, it's literally... every couple songs is just a straight up just like a reggae song, not even punk at all. It's an interesting listen, but it's a very good album, very high energy. I love this band very much. It's very good.
Shot of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then coming up here, we have two different Queen songs played by two different people.
And they are
from
not
the same album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not in order.
Yeah, not in order.
We have Don't Stop Me Now.
And Tie Your Mother Down.
And yeah, one thing I want to mention about this particular album is that there's quite a few overdubs. I believe these were released in like the 70s from like kind of a range of concerts around that time. But yeah, in Don't Stop Me Now, the harmonies, I was like, that sounds like Freddie singing the harmonies there. And and then they mentioned, yeah, no, he did overdub that. And they don't even think that he actually sang the start of Don't Stop Me Now, like that intro bit. Like, he didn't really do that around that time. He didn't sing the intro, really. And so I think that was added in post as well.
They got two of them on stage. There's a clone. Don't worry about it.
The one that agrees of singing it live and the one that doesn't. Yeah, and then Tie Your Mother Down.
It's a good track. I'd say that's probably the best track off Live Killers, honestly.
That is a good live song. I like that better than the studio version, personally.
But, yeah.
But speaking of, live albums that apparently have a lot of overdubs, it was Turn the Page by Bob Seger off the album Live in quotation marks in Detroit, I think is the name of the album.
At Cobo Arena.
At Cobo Arena.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. Because if you're thinking of like Michigan-based kind of artists or stuff like that, Bob Seger has to at least be close to the top of your list.
Yeah, you got to know at least like what his contributions and where he's from.
I mean, Live Bullet and Night Moves were like the two albums that kind of shot him into stardom, really. Mm. I mean, I remember my grandpa telling me stories about, well, he's still alive, but, you know, I remember he'd tell me stories about like going to see Bob Seger like in school playing in Detroit clubs and stuff.
Wow. Like before he was famous?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Hmm. And next up, another Cobo Arena kind of thing is Rock and Roll All Night by the band Kiss, which, it's a pretty good song.
It's kind of what it says on the tin.
It's like, this is kind of like one of those things, like it's cool listening to it, like sitting or whatever, but you have to experience a Kiss concert.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I've seen them twice, and each time there was awesome.
Like, I believe that.
Awesome, man.
They're a very theatrical band. They lean very heavy into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And next up, Bob O'Reilly by The Who. And I've been wanting to play that for like a while because that harmonica solo at the end is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a beautiful song. Yeah. Anyway.
About like two, Sally and Ray, a couple farmers living, you know, in like Scotland outside of this polluted London, you know, and, you know, it's a teenage wasteland, essentially. We should cover Lifehouse and, at one of these future meetings.
That'd be
future
pretty cool.
Future episodes.
Nice.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one.
And also spitting in Circle Sky by the Monkees.
Yeah, this one.
Which is, it was from Head. Like, if you watch the movie Head, like the Circle Sky section is what they play. Like, it's from that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, kind of after the whole Monkees, like, in a war scene thing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this sort of, like, psyche post-proto-punk kind of thing. Because it's like that faster, like, upbeat kind of almost, like, punk time that, you know, bands use. But it's still, like, this kind of summery, like, 60s attitude to it as well. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Head is all over the place, really, in terms of, like, musical genres and stuff. Like, you got acid rock and the kind of that broke Broadway-y kind of pop stuff on there too. You know, it's crazy.
It's very interesting. I'd have to, it's on the list, I swear. It's in there somewhere.
No, how long is that list?
You have to watch Head.
I'll watch it.
Then listen to the soundtrack. Anybody listening, watch Head first.
If there's one thing you take away today.
Bingo.
Yeah, there is bingo.
Yeah.
Jeez. Moving on a little bit, we have
Macho Man.
Oh, we forgot Macho Man. Yeah, that wasn't on Spotify, apparently, for some reason, the live version of it.
And Sleazy's not on Spotify.
It's a tragedy.
Indeed.
But, yeah.
That's a kind of a, you know, it's Village People. It's kind of longer disco stuff. There's like a fake out ending there, too. But, I mean, still just a lot of fun, really good energy, especially if you're there watching them. It's got to be a ton of fun.
Yeah,
I believe that. We love the Village People. They're great. They're friends of the show,
friends
I think.
Of the show.
Except for the one guy. All right.
But
moving on. After that, what was that? Sorry.
Think by James Brown.
Oh, yes.
And the Famous Flames and
Marva Whitney.
Yeah, I was looking for who the featured female lead vocalist was on there.
Very nice.
Yeah, very good chemistry between them on the track. Very mm-hmm. funky.
I've heard
tons of energy.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. There's like Live at the Apollo Volume 3 or 2 or something. I've heard Volume 1 of that, but I haven't heard this one. But this one's also very good. James Brown, you talk about an artist who's perfected the live concert. I think he's probably one of the definitely up there.
He knows
the best live artist ever.
Knows how to get people moving, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely. Crazy energy. Every time I see a video of like one of the concerts, he's like doing like flips and stuff. He's like doing the splits.
He's like throwing the mic down and like it's almost falling and he comes back right up to catch it.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
And then we got, check off another bingo slot because we got Beginner's Luck.
King Gizzard.
By King Gizzard.
Bootleg Gizzard.
Bootleg Gizzard. That was the, I was asked, is this live? You know, is this live on Spotify anywhere? And it's like, yeah. I was like, okay. And I looked it up and that's what it was. But I wouldn't really consider it a bingo card because like it's almost every single other time I was here on the podcast, we didn't talk about a four-letter King Gizzard word or the other four-letter word that starts with W.
We
said check off the bingo card.
We didn't play any Ween. We don't get to talk about it.
We can actually scoot by on that one.
Because I wasn't there. You wouldn't have been ready. I have a whole Ween live album, which I will talk about another time.
Me too.
Wow. I have two Ween live albums, but that's beside the point.
Did you do a Ween deep dive yet?
We'll do that someday. That'll be like a 7-part series. Anyway, Beginner's Luck. This is a good, actually, it's a very good song. It's like one of their later, more recent albums, I think. It's like that vibe. It's like the boogie rock thing they got into.
Yeah, the recording was that we have in this playlist was from 2019 in Asheville.
That's not that recent. Never mind. But.
Not super recent,
don't make us feel super old.
It's within 10 years. It's fine.
Sure.
You can still count it on your fingers, you're fine.
Yeah, that's a good song. I liked it a lot. I've never listened to whatever album that's off of, but I can't even tell you which one that's off of.
Gumboot Soup.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, all right.
It was the red and the brown one. I think that's Gumboot Soup.
Oh, that's like an early one. Never mind.
I'm not really too big a King Gizzard fan.
That's all right.
You know, but it's off something.
But yeah, that's a very good song. It's a very nice jam. And then coming up after this one, I want to talk about two songs that weren't played one after another, but they kind of worked together at one. As ones, we have two songs by the Beach Boys from two very different kind of iterations of the Beach Boys, which are The Little Old Lady from Pasadena, which is off of their 1964 album, The Beach Boys Boys Concert. And then We Got Love off of their 1973 album, The Beach Boys in Concert. Two different albums. They couldn't bother to come up with like a better live album name because I don't even know why I wasn't
there.
They
named them the same thing.
Yeah, but I think that these two songs kind of show how much this band has kind of completely revamped themselves in like only like 10 years almost.
Yeah.
I mean, like, even me not being like a Beach Boys guy, like, yeah, there's kind of two definite like eras, at least distinct like eras that I can kind of identify.
Yeah.
There's like the older kind of like surf rock stuff that they did at the start. And then there's like the more Beatles-esque kind of stuff. Yeah. Like We Got Love.
Progressive pop stuff. This one, I think like the first song is a little, it's interesting because it's not actually a Beach Boys song. It's a Jane and Dean cover.
Yeah. Oh,
we're going to have to put them on the bingo card at this point.
Yeah. Especially.
It's been like two or three episodes. This hasn't been every.
The most last three, I think.
I don't know.
We should get Cody on like the bingo card too.
Depends if we recorded any in between, but we talked about them in the submarine races on the April Fool's.
Don't remind me about the submarine races.
But yeah, I like the live version of Little Old Lady.
Yeah, it's a nice.
It's fast and it's upbeat and it's, you know, really.
Yeah, this album, again, talking about overdubs. The original Beach Boys, both these albums are overdubbed, but the first one, I think especially, like, a couple of the songs on here is literally, they just took the studio backing track and sped it up and then put the live vocals over it, which is hilarious. I think it's I Get Around, they did that on this album.
Okay,
but it's definitely, though, it shows that, like, this band, even, like, the early iterations, even though they're, you know, very, it's kind of outwardly simplistic, you know, that kind of stuff, they still, there's a lot of energy behind it, and, like, they're capable live performers on their own, even without the army of studio of backing musicians, which would come with them on their later tour, which we see in the Beach Boys in Concert, which is another album I really adore. This is like right at their, I think it's probably the peak of their live act. They just released a couple albums before that. It was Holland was their most recent one before that. That's
Carl
a very good
Passions.
Carl and the
That's
Passions.
The kind of Chaplin, Fatar, era Beach Boys.
Yeah, those
Boys.
Are two people from two South African artists who got noticed by the Beach Boys, who were actually
noticed by Carl Wilson, of all people, and
they
were brought in.
And he recruited them directly into the band, which is very interesting. And they definitely gave this era its own kind of vibe, because they bring a lot more like hard rock, that kind of energy to the Beach Boys, of all people.
Kind of the sad thing is how like Carl can insert, and help, brother get this band. But when Brian Wilson discovers Three Dog Night, they all bully him and laugh at
That's
him.
That's a story. We'll talk about that at some point, I hope. But this song also is interesting because it this is the only time it was ever released
for 50 years.
Until the live, they put out a box set recently. But this is the live version of a song. It was supposed to be on their Holland album, but it got cut because they didn't like, the studio label didn't like it.
Is that We Got Love?
Yeah, We Got Love, yes.
It was supposed to be the ending track to side one of Holland.
It's a very good song.
And
but
they didn't see it really as a single. But and then,
really?
Yeah. Wow. Then Van Dyke Parks came in waving around
Brian Wright's Smile, by the way, that's
waving a cassette of Sail On Sailor, and they recorded it, and it was a moderate hit.
For Beach Boys standards at the time, it was a hit, which is like, I got to like number 80 on the chart.
It just shows you can never predict the market. Can never predict the market.
Yeah, but anyway, I was just going to say, this song's interesting because it's written by the two new members of the band, so it doesn't really sound like a Beach Boys song very much, like what you would assume a Beach Boys song to sound like, but it is a... It's a good, nice song. It's a good message to it, which is kind of like, it's an interesting, because it's informed by their experiences, like Ricky Fatar and Blondie Chaplin, the two South Africans. They're kind of talking about, the struggle that was going on within their, at their home country at the time with apartheid and all that. Yeah. And it's like it's a strong message for like a band, like, the Beach Boys to be taking, but that's kind of the direction they were in the 70s. They got they were a lot more politically involved. They tried to push
like
that
Carry
kind of
Me Home.
Yeah, that one didn't end up on the album.
No, that was another one that went like truly unreleased for 50 years.
Yeah.
But that's like a dark song we can't really talk about.
Oh, it was about the Vietnam War. It's kind of a strange thing for the Beach Boys to talk about.
Okay, if we're talking about it, it was a song by Dennis Wilson.
Yeah, that guy.
About, and he pictured himself as a Vietnam soldier dying in a ditch, and feeling the cold seep up his body.
This band wrote Fun, 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 by the way. They wrote Fun, Fun, Fun and Good Vibrations and also the Vietnam War thing, but that didn't come out for some reason.
Also, don't Beach Boys have like an album where it's like Paul Revere like stabbed through like it on his horse or something?
No,
that's Surf's Up. That was
Surf's Up.
That was the
End of the Trail. It was like a Native American
statue.
Oh, okay.
End of the Trail statue.
Which is, again, that's
which is when, natives... Manifest Destiny, let's just say. Bring it
End of the Trail at the Pacific Ocean.
There's no more land.
Yeah.
It's very, again, like they were getting into a lot of like heavier topics at that time, which is pretty crazy for the Beach Boys. But anyway,
speaking of Manifest Destiny and all that fun 19th century stuff, we've got Locomotive Breath.
Anyway, nice transition.
Yeah, trains. That's my my transition was trains.
I was like, okay. That's a shift. That's. I know where we're going, but wait, wow, that's a journey.
That was a train journey. Very good.
But yeah, so this is one that I brought in. It didn't get played very long because I had some karma happen to me that I imparted on Tyler about a month ago.
Yeah.
So we were doing the nighttime music stuff, and Steve Miller was playing. And I, like a ditz, just walked up and was like, "Oh, Sleep Drifter, King Gizzard, bleep, bleep, bleep." and people gave me a weird look, "Oh, did I just cut someone off?"
You felt, you seemed like you felt so bad, and I'm trying to say, "Hey, no, don't worry about it, don't worry about it." And then your song gets cut off, "Locomotive Breath" by Andy cuts it off and transitions to us and them. And Andy feels awful, and you're like, no, don't feel bad.
It literally happened to me like a month ago.
I just told you, I was like, hey, welcome to my shoes.
Well, you also were
Andy.
Does anyone else have deja vu?
Yeah.
But it was Locomotive Breath.
Yeah, that was a pretty good song, I'd say.
Yeah. And, Andy did a much more graceful transition into his than I did.
Yeah.
I wasn't even mad. It was fine. But yeah,
that's,
and then,
yeah, well, again, welcome to my shoes, because like I it was fine.
Yeah, I finally feel comfortable enough talking about it to be able to talk about it now.
I'm glad we finally got it down on like audio.
Yeah. Finally put
for posterity.
Yeah.
But yeah, so us and them, really good recording of that too. Just really nice atmospheric, good space.
They did the whole album live. That's interesting. Not a bands don't. I mean, Pink Floyd did that a lot. Like they'll do a whole album at once live. But I don't know if a lot of bands will do that. That's interesting.
I saw that Live in Pompeii movie, that concert film. That was awesome.
Yeah. I got to see that. I haven't watched that yet.
Well, I don't think it's in theaters anymore.
Well, I'll find it somewhere.
Yeah. Coheed also does that a bit too. They have the Neverender series where they've done it back in like 2008, 2009. They did it around there. They did like their first four albums in four different nights, back to back to back to back.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense for them because it's like a story. Yeah. But interesting thing for a band to just do a whole album at once. That's I like that.
Now we got Steve Martin in the Toot Uncommons.
Okay, let me just say, I spent hours trying to find a live version of this. It's from the album A Wild and Crazy Guy, but I just couldn't find a live version on Spotify, so I had to go with the 45 version because you can't, like, it's a fun song.
Yeah.
It's just
about
a bunch of
Arizona and
King
Tut
puns.
Yeah.
I listened to this while I was like, I listened to this whole playlist in preparation while I was like doing the dishes, and I had to like stop because I was like, what is going on right now? It was funny, but like it made me angry to listen to him. Like, stop with the puns. I get it.
Again,
I get it.
Again, Andy. Shout out Andy.
Good friend of the show.
Yeah.
Steve, and that is that Steve Martin, the one.
Yeah,
from,
the one from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Little Shop of Horrors.
The Amigos and Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah.
Huh.
He was in Pink Panther too.
I didn't know any of this. This is a lot.
You never seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it. I'm sorry.
It's the Thanksgiving movie.
We don't watch it at Thanksgiving.
Just like how Alice's Restaurant Massacre is the Thanksgiving song.
Take it up with my mom and dad or something, or my family. That's not my fault. I'm sorry.
I feel like sitting on a sofa right now.
Okay. Jeez. Good transition.
Spoiler, the next song.
Frank Zappa, Sofa.
It sounds like something that you'd hear like the band play on the Tonight Show. Like, that's what I thought when I heard it.
All right, hit it, band.
Yeah. I liked it. Yeah.
Live in New York, we actually did have a couple other Frank Zappa albums.
Yeah, that I brought in. Surprisingly, I brought in, and we just decided play the best one, and I brought in Roxy and Elsewhere.
That was Tim that gave us that stipulation.
Yeah. I brought in Roxy and Elsewhere, and I brought in Rubber Slices.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. And then we got Bangladesh from George Harrison.
And that was an interesting, the concert for Bangladesh, that's probably one of the biggest live albums ever.
Like for benefit live albums.
Yeah, no, but that's probably the most famous. If we're talking about like benefit live albums, that's definitely the most famous one. Because like this was like...
Benefit concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I think it was the first... like real like superstar benefit concert that was ever done as well. So like anything like Live Aid, that kind of stuff, they all trace their origins back to this.
You got George Harrison, Bob Dylan, you know, all these other...
Ringo was there.
Yeah. I brought that in. That was the first time I ever opened that album to play something off it.
Nice. Same with me in the Live at Starlin Ballroom. I've done that with a couple of albums here at Record Club. It's like, it's the first time I actually get to play something off this.
Yeah.
To bust it open.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot. I always find something, I'm like, they'd love this, they'll eat this up.
But I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Right.
But just really nice, spicy, kind of funky, you know, sort of groove going on.
I like this a lot better than like the original studio single version. This is definitely a lot more energy to it.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting because this is technically like a 50% Beatles reunion, this album, because it's got Ringo and George on it. Paul didn't want to come. John wanted to bring Yoko, and George didn't want Yoko to be there, so he didn't go either. But still, 50%, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. We missed John for this album. We didn't. That's the only Beatle we didn't get in this album or in this.
Or Ringo.
Oh, Ringo's on this song.
I thought you were talking about live, you know, live Paul, live I don't George, think that, live John, live Ringo.
Yeah, I don't think there's a Ringo live album out there, but if there is, bring it, I guess. We'll listen to it. We'll have fun with Ringo. But Does anybody have anything else I want to go back to before we get out of here? All right.
No, that's pretty much everything. Really.
That wraps it up for today. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you have any interest in attending any of our meetings or learning about past playlists or seeing any past podcasts, you can check out our website, which is linked with the show, to get any updates, meeting themes, past playlists, all that kind of stuff. It's a very... we'd be happy to have you at these meetings. Summer meetings go a little bit longer than our regular meetings, so, and there's no theme, so you feel free to bring in whatever you really want to share with us. It's a really great group of people, very eclectic music taste, you can tell from today, but we'll be happy to have whatever you want to bring in, whatever you want to show to us. We'd love to listen to it. Even if you don't own any records yourself, if you're interested in learning, listening to new music, hanging out with a good group of people, come on and check us out. We'd love to have you.
Yep.
Thank you very much for listening in, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Sharing the voices of Lansing Community College. Visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College's downtown and west campuses offer conference and event spaces that can accommodate over 500 attendees. LCC offers hybrid meeting capabilities, in-house catering, free event parking, and on-site customer service. For more information about LCC's conference and event spaces, visit lcc.edu and search conference.
Hi, I'm Lisa Alexander, and I host a show called Who's That Star on LCC Connect. This show is all about an inside look at the LCC community, where you get a chance to meet our faculty and staff, plus learn about their passion projects at work and at home. You can catch Who's That Star here on LCC Connect or listen anytime at lccconnect.org.
As a veteran of the United States military, I can finally get the opportunity to enjoy special events, like a date with my wife, or going out together with my family and friends. Things that we couldn't afford, thanks to VetTix. Every empty seat at a concert, a game, motorsports, or a play is a missed opportunity to say thanks to a veteran and service member. We can help. We can give our veterans a special event where they, too, can create their own cherished memories. Find out how by visiting www.vettix.org. That's www.vettix.org. Find out how you can make a difference in a veteran's life.
A 7-week job training opportunity is now enrolling, and many can participate tuition-free. Those who have graduated from high school within the last 5 years can attend the Electrical Control Technician Boot Camp at no cost, thanks to grants from the Michigan Department of Economic Development. Those interested in the Electrical Control Technician Boot Camp provided by the LCC Job Training Center can learn more at lcc.edu/JTC.
This has been LCC Connect Weekly, a presentation of LCC Connect, a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College. Production and sound engineering for LCC Connect Weekly and its podcasts are provided by Dedalian Lowry and Brendan Skipper. Our theme song, Start a New Day, is performed by Samuel Biggs and licensed through DeWolf Music. Powered by the voices of LCC staff, faculty, students, and community volunteers, LCC Connect shares conversations and stories that reflect the creativity, culture, and the spirit of our college and community. We thank all of our hosts and contributors for sharing their time and talents. To hear today's featured podcasts on demand, learn more about the network, become a guest, or explore ways to get involved, visit us anytime at lccconnect.com.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.